This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
It is enormous. It is one of the biggest humanitarian crises in the world. Over 10 million people in need of humanitarian assistance. And within the health sector, we're targeting about 5.8 million people. The rates of death amongst children in some areas are four times above what we would call the humanitarian threshold.
That's Dr. Richard Brennan, Director for Emergency Operations for the World Health Organization. He's commenting on the humanitarian crisis in northeastern Nigeria and the Lake Chad region. Also in Pretoria, South Africa today, police fired stun grenades, rubber bullets, water cannons, and arrested about 150 people in the wave of anti-immigrant protests. Hundreds of Coptic Christians are fleeing the northern Sinai after increasing attacks by suspected Islamic State militants. And the FAO says that Zimbabwe will be the country hardest hit by the invasion of armyworms. We'll have these stories and more. Stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story in Pretoria, South Africa, police fired stun grenades, rubber bullets, and water cannons at protesters today and arrested about 150 people. This as the latest wave of anti-immigrant protests broke out in the country's capital. President Jacob Zuma condemned the anti-foreigner violence and appealed for calm. VOA correspondent Anita Powell is covering today's developments and spoke with me about the anti-immigrant march and what triggered it.
Residents of a Pretoria area called Mamelodi said that they were going to march against foreigners today. They didn't initially get permission from the police to do so, but then it appears at the last minute they did. Now, the estimates for how many people showed up, it varies. Authorities initially said in the dozens. Then police said later that they arrested about 150 people. So it appears that a few hundred people showed up on this short march through the center of Pretoria, the capital.
What led up to today's protests?
The most recent thing that maybe sparked a protest is in December, the mayor of Johannesburg made some comments about foreign residents of Johannesburg. He equated them to criminals. He said he was going to clean them out. Comments like this. He was sharply rebuked for these comments, but clearly people listened, people remembered them. And that led to, earlier this week, some unrest in a few other Pretoria neighborhoods, where shops owned by foreign nationals were looted, were destroyed, people were chased away. But xenophobia is not new in South Africa. Even since 1994, when South Africa became democratic and more immigrants began to settle here, there have been big problems in South Africa with inequality, with poverty, with high unemployment. And these issues have persisted. And some people in South Africa feel it's much easier to point the blame at foreign nationals. The evidence doesn't back this up. The unemployment rate has stayed unacceptably high. It's now around 30% for more than two decades. And so you can't blame foreign nationals for something like that when they've only been in this country for that long. It's a very complex problem, but really what it ties to is that there are still serious problems in South Africa's economy that just haven't been addressed.
I understand there are a number of businesses that are run by Somalis, Ethiopians, and others that have often been the targets of anti-foreigner protests. So what is their side of the story? What are they saying about this?
You know, it depends, of course, on the individual, but it is common in certain parts of South African cities to find a number of shops that are owned by foreign nationals. There are several reasons for this, they say. I spoke to a number of them earlier this week, and they pointed out that South Africa's immigration laws are quite strict. It's very difficult as a foreign national to get access to credit, to get access to even simple bank accounts, to get access to a tax ID. So you can't actually participate always in the formal economy if you are an immigrant. It's also very difficult to get a permit in South Africa. It's just a notoriously inefficient process. And so many immigrants tell me that they feel like they have no choice but to participate in these sort of gray economic zones, owning small shops, providing services.
I understand that some of these business owners were even out there with the protesters this morning trying to defend themselves and their businesses.
there were members of the immigrant community who did protest at the protest, and things honestly got ugly. There were a number of Somali immigrants who were carrying rocks, who said, you know, we are prepared to die, who were very upset by this spate of anti-immigrant violence. And that did lead the police to intervene and to fire tear gas, rubber bullets, and water cannons at the protesters and to make more than 100 arrests. So it was not a pretty scene in Pretoria this morning.
What is the mood right now? I understand the president has appealed for calm as well as the Home Affairs Minister. So is there calm right now?
Right now, the police say that they have the situation under control. How long will that last? It's hard to say. It's also worth noting that it's the end of the month. Many South Africans get paid around the 25th or on the last day of the month. And so as a result, there are a lot of people who are kind of close to the end of their monthly paycheck, to the end of their February paycheck, who on a Friday night might be upset, might not have a lot of money, and that might incite people. And that has nothing to do with foreign nationals so much as it has to do with the prevailing mood in some of these areas.
That was reporter Anita Powell in Johannesburg, South Africa. Also, the rights group Amnesty International has released a statement saying South African authorities have largely failed to address the outbreak of xenophobic crimes that has been seen in the country since at least 2008 and bring those responsible to justice. It says failure to act sends a worrisome message that such acts are tolerated by the authorities. Meanwhile, thousands of Zimbabweans living in South Africa are reportedly anxious over anti-immigrant sentiment and occasional xenophobic violence. Reporter Kuzaji Zvinavashi spoke with some Zimbabweans about the problem.
In the past few days, South Africa has witnessed violent cases of xenophobia against foreigners as a build-up to the expected protests. Ngobizita Sibanda is a Zimbabwean based in Mamelodi, a township in Pretoria where violence has taken place. He says the situation is tense.
I'm illegally residing in Mamelodi. Of late, there have been rumors and signs that there are going to be xenophobic attacks. Some Nigerians have been attacked. It first happened in Johannesburg, then happened in Pretoria West. The calls for a march against illegal immigrants intensified. These people, they say they are going to attack the immigrants because they're taking their jobs.
Supporters of the protests have been mobilizing for the past month on social media and other platforms. Sibanda says some companies that hire immigrants have been targeted.
They named ShopRite, Spar, okay, and some other supermarkets as their targets. But of lately, it has come to surface that these people will not only be targeting those people that are working, but we think everyone is going to be attacked. Every foreigner is going to be attacked.
Economic collapse and political violence has led many Zimbabweans to move to South Africa illegally over the decades. Political analyst Kudakwashe Musasiwa explains why so many Zimbabweans have crossed the border.
I believe the reason why we have so many young Zimbabweans, the reason why they all serving in bars, in restaurants in South Africa right now, getting attacked by these xenophobic idiots, is because our fathers have failed. There is no jobs for us. 95% of us are unemployed anyway. The reason why we're all in South Africa right now is because our fathers failed us. They failed us dismally.
Victor Kucherera is Youth Assembly President for a political party called Freedom Justice Coalition Zimbabwe and is currently based in South Africa.
For some of us, we are very scared to be in South Africa, but there's nothing that we can do because we cannot go back to Zimbabwe and starve. So we just have to dodge bullets every now and then. What can we do because there are no jobs in Zimbabwe?
Sibanda says many foreigners are thinking about how best to survive any potential attacks.
We're just praying that we stay safe and no one is get harmed, and because some of the Zimbabweans and the Nigerians are calling other immigrants that they're not going to lay down and let this guy beat them. They're going to fight back. So it's sort of going to be intense. I just wish it doesn't happen.
Some foreign-owned shops have closed for business, fearing looting during any potential attacks. Millions of South Africans are unemployed, and people accuse foreigners of taking jobs. Some observers say the tensions will likely continue until economic growth across Africa improves and fewer people seek refuge in South Africa. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir is in Ethiopia, where he's holding border security talks. South Sudan and Ethiopia agreed last to cooperate in on the issue. While Kiir is in Ethiopia, efforts are gearing up to try to deal with famine in parts of Unity State and widespread hunger and malnutrition in much of the country. This week, the European Union pledged nearly $87 million in humanitarian assistance to South Sudan. South African President Jacob Zuma wants to change the government's land redistribution plan. Instead of a willing seller doing business with a willing buyer, President Zuma proposes to amend laws to allow faster land reform. Those plans include land expropriation. A bill sent to lawmakers last week would allow the government to take land from white owners at an amount determined by the government. Reuters news agency quotes President Zuma as saying the government needs to take bold steps that will transform the economy. More than two decades after the end of apartheid, most of South Africa's land remains in the hands of white residents. Hundreds of Coptic Christians are fleeing the northern Sinai after increasing attacks by suspected Islamic State militants. Seven Coptic Christians have been killed in the past month, including a man and his daughter, who were attacked today in their home. AP reports militants shot the man in front of his family, then kidnapped his daughter before stabbing her and leaving her body near a police station. Coptic Christians make up 10% of Egypt's population. They've come under increasing attacks since the military overthrow of President Mohamed Morsi in 2013. The crisis in northeastern Nigeria and the Lake Chad region is the focus of today's Emergency Humanitarian Summit in Oslo. At the summit, the United Nations announced a new $1 billion appeal to respond to the terrible effects of the Boko Haram insurgency. Donors pledged most of that amount today, promising more than $670 million in humanitarian aid. Nigerian Foreign Minister Jeffrey Onyema estimates 26 million people in the region have been affected by Boko Haram. About 20,000 people have been killed since the militants began their attacks in 2009. There's widespread displacement and food shortages, and famine-like conditions are reported in some makeshift camps for the displaced. Aid agencies are just gaining access to many areas. Dr. Richard Brennan is director for emergency operations for the World Health Organization and is attending the summit. From the Norwegian capital, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua about the scope of the crisis.
It is enormous. It is one of the biggest humanitarian crises in the world. Over 10 million people in need of humanitarian assistance. And within the health sector, we're targeting about 5.8 million people. The rates of death amongst children in some areas are four times above what we would call the humanitarian threshold. That's almost unheard of in the last 15 to 20 years in most humanitarian crises. We've had major outbreaks of polio. In fact, the global program to eradicate polio is being threatened by the crisis in northern Nigeria. We've also had a big outbreak of measles, which can be life-threatening amongst children who are malnourished. There's a huge problem with malnutrition and access to food in the north. And in some areas, about 20% of children are acutely malnourished, which can be a life-threatening condition. And we've also recently done a survey of over 700 health facilities and found that 60% of them are not functioning. So whatever way you cut it, we've got a huge crisis. And currently, the resources to address those needs are out of proportion to its scale.
Can you say whether the situation is worse in northeastern Nigeria or in the Lake Chad region?
In terms of numbers, about 80% of the people in need of assistance are in northern Nigeria. But you're right, the problem flows over the border into the other Lake Chad countries, Niger, Cameroon, and Chad. But the majority of the need is in northeastern Nigeria.
Now, you took part in a discussion today at the Humanitarian Summit on sustainable health response in emergencies How can you have a sustainable response in this situation?
Now, it's a great question, and it's a thorny one. So the first priority is to save lives. And when you've got a health system that's not functioning, like I described, 60% of health facilities not working, health workers not being there, drugs not being available, we really do some very, very basic things. We run what are called mobile clinics, and we target the hard-to-reach, most vulnerable populations through these mobile clinics. We basically put medical teams into cars and try to reach as many communities as we can. But that's not a sustainable solution, and it's not a cost-efficient solution. One of the big problems is the security situation. I mean, there's a conflict going on up there. But as the conflict settles down, as the situation becomes more stable, we have to change our tack very, very quickly, shift from the mobile clinics to try to reactivate those primary healthcare services. We'll be running mobile clinics for a long time, but we want to progressively reactivate those health services. And then as we do that, we hope that that will form the foundation for a longer-term health system recovery. That's going to be dependent on a complex range of other issues, funding, political support, and resources.
Now, you're the WHO's Director for Emergency Operations. Just how many emergency operations are you now involved in?
47. From Syria to Yemen to Somalia to South Sudan. We have a recent outbreak in Sao Tome Principe in the Atlantic Ocean. We're responding to emergencies due to conflict, due to drought and malnutrition, due to infectious disease outbreaks, and recently natural disasters as well.
How can you possibly not be stretched so thin at this stage?
Well, the whole international humanitarian system has never been so overloaded and overstretched. And you're right, we are. We don't have quite the bandwidth that we need. Well, frankly, anywhere near the bandwidth we need to address that huge scale of need. Right now, there are 125 million people worldwide needing humanitarian assistance. There are 65 million people who have been forced from their homes because of conflict. And these are the highest numbers on record. At the same time, we estimate we need over $20 billion this year just to provide basic humanitarian aid, food, water, shelter, sanitation, and healthcare.
Can any of these problems be solved completely without political solutions?
No, they cannot. All the ones that I've mentioned today, be it northern Nigeria, Syria, Yemen, South Sudan, Somalia, Congo, these are all political and developmental crises. There's no humanitarian answer to the underlying causes of those problems. We can save lives, but the answers ultimately are political, and they're also related to investing in people and integral human development. They're not ultimately humanitarian answers.
Dr. Richard Brennan is the World Health Organization's Director for Emergency Operations. From Oslo, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. Past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization has predicted that Zimbabwe will be the country hardest hit by the invasion of army worms in southern Africa. Farmers are already taking serious losses. Sebastian Mofu visited some of the hardest hit areas in the Midlands province of Zimbabwe and reports.
The Gokwe and Jombe areas in Zimbabwe's Midlands province are some of the areas most affected by an invasion of the four armyworms. Armyworms are a type of moth capable of destroying entire crops in a matter of weeks. It is the first time the insect has hit southern Africa, and seven countries have confirmed an outbreak of the four armyworm, which UN Food and Agriculture Organization says is more destructive and more difficult to control than the African armyworm. The four armyworm thrives during the rainy season, particularly after periods of prolonged drought, which is the case in southern Africa. The Zimbabwean government said earlier this month that it had deployed teams to spray pesticides, but Violet Muloyi is close to tears as she talks about how she watched armyworms devour her maize crop. Most of it was gone in 3 days.
Nokuti papa patine mari dzatakatoshandisa. She says she feels pained very much looking at her field. She says she sank in a lot of money and was looking forward to a great harvest since it is raining this year. But now she sees herself as someone facing hunger again. Muloi says she has no idea what brought this worm to her field. She asked others about the worms. She says some advised her to use pesticides. Others said just spray soil over the plants. She says she did that and it actually got worse. The FAO says up to 150,000 hectares could be destroyed in Zimbabwe. The armyworm is targeting mainly corn and maize, the country's staple crop. That is a serious concern as Zimbabwe is already struggling with food shortages. It was one of the African countries hardest hit by El Nino-induced drought during the 2015-2016 growing season. Diversification has helped some small farmers. Armyworms destroyed Catherine Nkomazana's maize crop, but all is not lost. She's part of a program funded by Britain's Department for International Development that teaches farmers, especially women, to raise livestock.
Apart from maize, we sell goats, poultry, we sell, we pay school fees, we've got rabbits, we use them for our meals, yes. Rapoko, and sorghum, yes, and sorghum. Sesame, I've got millet.
Rita Gasura, a Minister of Agriculture official in Jombe, says farmers need to be vigilant.
We are advising the farmers to use chemicals to spray the armyworm. And also we are advising them to scout their fields every day. They need to scout so that they use the chemicals early before the crops are destroyed by the armyworm. Maybe I can say almost 40% of the crops were affected by the armyworm.
That figure might increase as farmers in this area say they have no money to buy chemicals. They are still trying to recover lost earnings from 2 years of drought. It is also raining, thus creating a nice environment for the four armyworm to thrive. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Jombe, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Peter Hundley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, Mambo! This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This Sunday, treat your ears to a luscious hour of African music. From new, fresh, hot airway hip-hop to Tuareg rock and roll to island fusion of the Seychelles, I've got it for you! Plus, in this edition, live music and interviews with amazing artists from Zanzibar's 2017 Sauti za Busara Festival. All this and more just for you, peeps. So tune in this Sunday, 1500 and 2000 UTC, right here with me, Heather, on Music Time in Africa.